Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to a special live edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. It is noon, Central Time, on this Wednesday, July 12, 2023, and I'm joined by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
We are here to talk about the momentous action taken last night when Iowa lawmakers passed a new law that would ban abortions after about 6 weeks of pregnancy. We are going to cover all of it. What happened? What was said during the debates? What's already happened this Wednesday morning in terms of a legal challenge and more. But first, the state legislature passing that bill banning nearly all abortions in Iowa after about 6 weeks of pregnancy. Governor Reynolds announced she would sign the bill this Friday afternoon. Laura, let's talk about how it all came about.
So this bill is very similar to the one that was passed in 2018. And the Republicans who managed the bill in the Iowa House and Senate were very clear that what they are passing is nearly identical to what the Iowa Supreme Court did not reinstate. And the one big difference is that this bill goes into effect immediately on the governor's signature rather than after 90 days, which is the usual default for legislation.
Final passage came in the state Senate just after 11 o'clock last night. You were there. Talk about the Senate vote and the debate.
The Senate, both chambers, the votes were almost along party lines. Every Democrat was opposed to this bill. So every Democrat voted against it. One Republican in the Senate voted against it, Senator Mike Klemisch. I have not been able to reach him. I did reach out to him to find out why. There were two Republicans in the House who voted against the bill. They both opposed it because it didn't go far enough in banning abortion. And I don't know whether that is also Senator Klemisch's view or whether he voted against it because he thought it was too extreme a ban.
The final vote in the Senate was 32-17 in favor of the bill, and that came 2 hours after the House had passed the bill. The Senate's passage was punctuated by noise, lots of noise in the chamber.
Yes, there were people in the public galleries in both chambers, and there were a little bit of shouting in the House, but much more in the Senate, because, as you mentioned, the House passed it first. So the Senate's action was the final passage, and everybody knew it was a done deal. I mean, the House passed the bill, and they adjourned immediately. They didn't wait to see whether the Senate would amend it in any way that they would need to approve it. Everybody knew this was a done deal. So what the Senate passage meant that it was going to the governor, and that's when there was a bit of a disturbance in the gallery.
The House vote was 56-34 in favor. As you say, every Democrat opposed it, along with two Republicans.
Yes, and there were 10 members absent. The two Republicans who voted against it were Mark Cisneros and Zach Deacon. They had both co-sponsored legislation earlier in the year that would be a total abortion ban. And I was not able to catch up with Representative Cisneros yesterday, but I did speak with Representative Deacon in the afternoon, and he confirmed that the reason why he was planning to vote against the bill was because he thought it did too much to legalize abortion and that he thinks that it should basically never be legal. There were 10 House members absent, six Republicans and four Democrats. And I haven't been able to hear back from most of the Republicans who were absent. One of them, Jane Bloomingdale, did vote against the bill in 2018. And there was some speculation yesterday that some of the House Republicans just preferred to avoid the special session rather than vote against the bill. But I don't know the reasons that all six of them weren't there.
After the vote late last night, Governor Reynolds issued a statement and she took a jab at the state Supreme Court.
Yes, she did. And the floor managers did as well during the debate. But the governor's statement said the Iowa Supreme Court questioned whether this legislature would pass the same law they did in 2018. And today they have a clear answer. And that is what, when there were amendments proposed in both chambers, and really amendments that in some sense, you would think that perhaps the majority party would agree to them. But it was clearly a decision was made before the special session that they were going to pass virtually the identical bill as 2018 to make clear to the Iowa Supreme Court that this is the will of the General Assembly.
Let's talk about the details of the would-be new law, which the governor again says she will sign on Friday afternoon at the Family Leadership Summit in Des Moines. Give us some details. What does this bill say?
So the supporters of the bill have been calling it a heartbeat bill. That's not really a medically accurate term. There are, at a certain point, using an abdominal ultrasound, which the bill specifies an abdominal ultrasound, when cardiac activity can be detected, and that usually happens around 6 weeks, that would say that abortion is prohibited with a few limited exceptions after any time that the bill says fetal heartbeat, but in fact, it's not a fetus at 6 weeks and it's not technically a heartbeat. So it's embryonic cardiac activity, which usually would occur around 6 weeks. That's often before many people are aware they are pregnant. And so the Republicans, that it was in the House, it was State Representative Shannon Lundgren, and in the Senate President Amy Sinclair, and they were adamant. They repeatedly returned to this point that this is not a 6 week ban. The bill does not say 6 weeks. The bill says fetal heartbeat, but it usually that can be detected using an abdominal ultrasound around 6 weeks.
So that restriction is a sharp deviation from the current law in Iowa, which still, as of today and through tomorrow and into Friday, allows abortions up to 20 weeks. So it's a major change.
It's a major change. And I mean, there are a lot of people who have procedures scheduled in the coming days and weeks, and many of them are likely going to need to change those plans.
All right. The law has several exceptions for rape and incest, for fetal abnormalities that are incompatible with life, for medical emergencies that threaten the life of the mother, or for a miscarriage. But there are some issues with these exceptions, potentially very important issues. Let's start with rape and incest.
Yes, and I watched all of the Iowa House debate and a good portion of the Senate debate, and a lot of it yesterday was related to these exceptions. So the bill specifies rape if the rape was reported within 45 days to either law enforcement or a public health agency or a family physician. But here's the issue. The Iowa Criminal Code does not define rape. Rape is not a crime in the Iowa Criminal Code. There is sexual abuse in various degrees. And the code was changed in the 1970s. So this came up during the Iowa House debate. A couple of the attorneys who are in the Democratic caucus in the House were trying to drill down on this. And the floor manager, Shannon Lundgren, said, well, I think Iowans know what rape means, but it's not defined in the bill. So that is a tricky point right there. Incest also not defined in the bill. And apparently there are two different versions of Iowa code. There are two different places in Iowa code that refer to incest and define it in different ways.
And we also think we all know about what a medical emergency is. But the question is, does the language in the bill talk specifically about what it is?
And here's the biggest issue with that part of the bill. It says that the Iowa Board of Medicine, which is an appointed body appointed by the governor, that they shall adopt rules to administer that section of the bill about the medical emergency. But it takes about 90 days for administrative rules to be issued. That's if the legislature approves the proposed rules, which doesn't always happen. But the minimum time frame is about 90 days. And as we've been saying, this bill is going to take effect immediately upon the governor's signature. So the bill will take effect, and doctors and hospitals will really have no idea what the details will be about a medical emergency. And Dr. Megan Srinivas, who is an Iowa House Democrat, was talking about how, from a medical perspective, when you talk about an emergency, she's thinking somebody whose life is in danger, who's decompensating, who might die right now. Whereas there are a lot of serious medical situations where, under current practice, they would often recommend a termination. For instance, someone is diagnosed with cancer and needs to start chemotherapy, and that would require an abortion. But somebody who has cancer and needs chemotherapy, that is, some people might say that's not an emergency, right? You're not going to die today from the cancer that was just diagnosed. So there are a lot of questions about that part of the bill.
And that ties in with the potentially life-threatening conditions that we're talking about. Many of them do not immediately threaten a woman's life, but they very well could down the road.
Yes, it talks about severe impairment or permanent impairment of bodily functions, but that, again, is a judgment call. And some of the doctors were saying, Austin Baith is a doctor who is also an Iowa House Democrat representing a Des Moines district. And he said, doctors may disagree on whether something is life-threatening. And also the law says that certain conditions can't be considered for that. So mental health conditions don't count, familial conditions. So that might be if somebody has an abusive partner, for instance, and the woman's age, that can't count as a life-threatening condition. Well, a medical practitioner might say, well, this woman's advanced age does put her at risk for a life-threatening condition. Or if somebody has a depression and is suicidal, you might say that is actually a high risk factor, being pregnant and suicidal, and yet mental health conditions are specifically excluded in this. And one other issue that came up, this was an amendment Democrats tried to run in both the House and the Senate that would have said the exception always applies to anyone who's pregnant who's age 12 or younger. And the argument being that even a healthy 10 or 11 or 12 year old, that it could be life-threatening to continue to carry through a pregnancy and go through childbirth, even if there's no imminently life-threatening condition. And those amendments were voted down in both chambers. And yet many medical professionals would say it's not advisable for a 10-year-old to give birth.
And one more note, the language on fetal anomalies incompatible with life is quite vague, isn't it?
Yes. And there were people who testified. There was an Iowa House public hearing in the morning and a Senate subcommittee later in the same day where some people were testifying that actually one of the people who was supporting the law was saying she was pregnant. She was told that this fetus has no chance at life. And now he's 7 years old. So practitioners may disagree. There are some diagnoses like, let's say there's no brainstem. There's no brain. Obviously, that's incompatible with life. But there might be some conditions where perhaps the fetus only has a 5 or 10% chance of surviving to birth, and that some doctors would say that's incompatible with life and some wouldn't. And again, this comes back to the fact that the Iowa Board of Medicine, which is supposed to draft rules to implement these parts of the bill, it's going to take them months to draft rules. And then there's no guarantee that the legislature will approve the rules. So it could be a very long time that doctors are in limbo. And what we've seen in other states that have enacted near total abortion bans is that doctors and hospitals tend to be very cautious, and they don't like to do things that possibly put their license at risk. So what's probably going to happen is we'll see a lot of situations where currently the current practice would be to recommend terminating a pregnancy, and doctors are going to be very reluctant to recommend that if this law is in effect.
So the bottom line is, while these exceptions appear to be clear cut, they are as clear as mud.
It's very unclear. And then, I mean, I'll just give another example that came from the Iowa House debate. So the rape exception, you have to have reported the rape within 45 days. And of course, a lot of people might not necessarily know they're pregnant within 45 days. I think what they're getting at there is they're trying to avoid a situation where someone finds out they're pregnant and files a false rape report or something to get an abortion. The incest exception says it needs to be reported within 140 days, recognizing that many incest victims who are young, they might be less likely to report. The abuse might not be discovered until they're further along in pregnancy and so on.
Laura, are you there? I think you're frozen. Mike, is she frozen? All right. While we're waiting for Laura to come back, and she will come back, I'm going to tell you that before the vote on the law yesterday, there were protests in the Capitol Rotunda. Hundreds of protesters flooded the Capitol grounds. They chanted for hours. As you would imagine, it got to be a mess. Arguments broke out between supporters and opponents of the bills, becoming so heated at one point that a state trooper had to break them up. Democratic House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst urged the crowd of abortion rights supporters to make their voices heard both yesterday and next year. Well, they did yesterday. Protesters were clanging bells and chanting, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, abortion bans have to go." Others were chanting, "My body, my choice." One man held a Bible and approached a crowd of abortion rights advocates, and he screamed that they were killing babies and asked, "Why do you hate yourselves?" Several abortion rights supporters screamed back, leading a state trooper to break it all up. The American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, Planned Parenthood, and the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa had set up tables and supplied abortion rights advocates with coffee. That was the shiny object, basically, that the television stations covered last night off the top of their newscast, the protesters on the grounds of the Capitol. But the protesters, of course, ultimately had very little to say what was going on inside. There was public comment in committee meetings in the legislature. Iowans packed into rooms inside to plead their case directly to lawmakers, speaking both for and against the bill at public hearings in the House and the Senate. Democrats raised objections to the bill, as of course you knew they would, asking how doctors will be expected to follow a law that will be implemented immediately. And Laura Bellin just talked about that before we lost her on the computer. In the House committee meeting yesterday morning, Democrats were offering a range of amendments to extend Medicaid coverage to mothers for 1 year after they give birth, to expand child care access and family planning services, to provide over-the-counter birth control, and to state that Iowans have the right to reproductive freedom. In each and every case yesterday, the amendments were shot down along party lines. Never had a chance. In the debates on the House and Senate floor, and they went on for more than 5 hours in the House and Senate, after we got through the committee hearings yesterday, Republicans and Democrats said many, many things. The Republican Senator Amy Sinclair said, this bill ensures all life is protected when a heartbeat is detected. The child in her mother's womb has her own heartbeat, her own DNA. She's a baby, and she deserves the same protections as any other baby in the state. That was Amy Sinclair. Representative Luana Stoltenberg said she was standing up for mothers who have died or are infertile as a result of an abortion. I'd like to stand up for my three children, she said, who lost their life and who died by abortion. These are Republicans' comments. Representative Brad Sherman, Representative Brad Sherman, said if they're not ready to have a baby, they should not have sex. A lot of people need to review their birds and bees. That's what was said, partly. There were many other things said yesterday. We're not going over all of them. Democrats obviously had their say in the debate on the House and Senate floor. Senator Janet Peterson, addressing GOP Majority Leader Jack Whitford, said, when you make a decision, Senator Whitford, to change the rules in democracy, to cut and muzzle the voices of Iowa women and those who love them and stand up for them, you're showing what Iowa looks like. That's a dictatorship. Sinclair said the language was identical. In response, the abortion language was identical to legislation debated at length and passed in 2018. Senator Janice Wiener said the bill should not go into effect immediately, and this is a Democrat again. She said that the rushed process shows incredible disrespect to Iowa doctors who would need time to understand the new rules. Laura Bellin is back with us. It is 15 minutes after the hour of 12 on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We're here for a special live edition of Capital Week. After the state legislature passed a bill last night banning most abortions in Iowa after 6 weeks of pregnancy. Laura, you are back with us, and I believe you can hear me now.
Yes, I can. I'm sorry. I rarely have a Wi-Fi outage, but that is what happened. And so I'm not sure where it cut off in the middle of my explaining. So
I've taken it for the last few minutes. And what I talked about was the protests at the state capitol in the rotunda. I talked about some of the public comments in committee meetings. And I was just going into the comments during the debate on the House and Senate floor. I talked about Amy Sinclair's comments, Luana Stoltenberg's. Why don't you take it from there? The debate, the heated debate on the House and Senate floor last night.
Well, it was very heated. First of all, it was unusual in the sense that they set a time limit on debate. That doesn't happen very often in the House, and it's really rare in the Senate. The last time the Senate cut off debate at a specific time was in 2017 when they passed the big collective bargaining overhaul. But usually in the Senate, they let people go on for as long as they want. And there were a number of senators who weren't able to speak before that time limit ran out at 11 p.m. And the same in the House, they ended up not going all the way up to the time limit for debate. But the Democrats were very unhappy about the restrictions. There were severe restrictions on the amendments that could be offered. The Democrats wanted to offer some pretty broad amendments, not just that. I think the one that I was talking about when I got cut off was the amendment that would have, I mentioned the amendment that would have said that an exception applies to everybody age 12 and under. But Democrats wanted to offer much broader amendments covering things like offering Medicaid coverage for 12 months postpartum, expanding family planning services under the state program, and things that would improve maternal health more broadly besides just abortion. And those were basically not debated. So Democrats were very unhappy about that. Also, the effective date in the Senate, Senator Janice Wiener of Iowa City proposed an amendment that would change the effective date to deal with this issue that we've been discussing, where the Iowa Board of Medicine hasn't adopted rules yet to implement the specific exemptions, and yet the bill is going to go into effect immediately. That was voted down. There was, as I mentioned, the leadership decided this bill was going to pass in the exact same version that it was introduced. And just generally, it was a very emotional debate. A lot of the legislators were talking about their personal experiences. Some were reading parts of messages that they received from constituents, sharing those messages with permission of the people, just the heartbreaking stories, the family stories related to abortions or botched abortions or abortions that were denied. And so it was just a very emotional debate all around.
And earlier, there had been experts, medical experts, who had testified, including one of them from Des Moines, Francesca Turner, who said the bill, as you pointed out just a few minutes ago, does not make clear when doctors can step in during emergency complications. She and others tried to make the point that this is a very loosely knit bill that may not stand up to real life.
Yes, and several medical practitioners testified at both the Iowa House public hearing and the Senate subcommittee. Two of them actually were OBGYN candidates, residents who are training at the University of Iowa right now. And they both said that if this goes into effect, they aren't going to be practicing in the state of Iowa. Their intention when they enrolled in medical school was to practice in rural Iowa, but this is going to really limit the scope of practice. And as they mentioned, and this was brought up during the Iowa House and Senate debate as well, that training in abortion procedures is not only used for abortions. There are situations like an incomplete miscarriage or ectopic pregnancies that are where the OBGYNs need to have those skills. And if they haven't been trained and experienced in doing abortions, and then someone presents with a medical emergency that requires one of these procedures, they are not going to have the proper training. So Iowa is already 50th in terms of OBGYNs per capita. That was a statistic that many Democratic legislators brought up during the debate, at saying that a law like this is only going to make that shortage worse and care even less accessible, especially in rural Iowa.
So we know what happened last night. Now the question is, what happens next? Well, it's already happened. Just an hour or two before this live broadcast at noon on Wednesday, Planned Parenthood and the ACLU filed a challenge in district court, asking the court to immediately act to protect what they call Iowans' access to essential health care. In other words, they have filed a request for an injunction before the governor has signed this bill into law. Let's talk about that.
Yes, it's interesting. You know, sometimes they say the ink was barely dry on the law, and this one, the ink is even out red, right? The governor hasn't even gotten out her pen to sign the bill, but she did issue an official statement declaring her intention to sign the bill, and I assume that it's on that basis that they filed for the injunction. Remember that filing a lawsuit is just the first step. That doesn't mean that the judge schedules a hearing the same day. So I think that the plaintiffs, these are the same plaintiffs who challenged the 2018 law, the ACLU of Iowa, representing Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, and the Emma Goldman Clinic, which is an abortion provider in Iowa City. They're saying that they need to block this from going into effect. They're making three claims under the Iowa Constitution, and they're trying to get a judge. I assume that a hearing will be scheduled fairly soon. I don't know how long it will take to get a hearing and to get a judge's decision on whether to block enforcement of this law while the litigation proceeds, but that is obviously going to be a very important question.
As Laura just said, we are in uncharted territory right now in Iowa. We do not know, as we speak right now on this Wednesday afternoon, what's going to happen with this suit. We do not know if the law is going into go into effect on Tuesday or Friday afternoon. She's scheduled to sign it at 2:15 at the Family Leadership Conference. We are really up in the air as to what's about to happen over the next 48 hours.
Well, and I mean, the judicial system gears don't usually turn very fast. I mean, again, the judge is going to schedule a hearing. I don't know which judge was assigned the case right now. And then at some point, the judge will issue an order on whether to have a preliminary injunction or not. Most states that have passed abortion bans have had those bans blocked while the litigation proceeds, but not all. The Texas was allowed to enforce its near total abortion ban while the case went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's really unclear. I would say there's a better chance than not that probably it will be enjoined, but you just don't know. The claims that they're making is that it is a due process violation, an equal protection violation, because it singles out abortion from other medical procedures and it discriminates against women, and also that it is generally a violation of the inalienable rights that all Iowans have that include, this is basically the Iowa version of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Meanwhile, Planned Parenthood says it's going to continue to provide abortion care to the extent legally allowed. So we're going to see what that means. They're going to help patients continue to connect with providers and resources.
Yes, and there was a press briefing on Monday talking about that. The medical director of Planned Parenthood North Central States, which is the affiliate that includes Iowa, was explaining how that's going to work. If someone presents at an Iowa clinic before cardiac embryonic activity can be detected, that then the clinic would be able to continue to provide abortion care as usual. If the person has a scheduled procedure or it's too late under the Iowa law and the Iowa law is in effect, then they have navigators. That Planned Parenthood has a lot of patient navigators. And she mentioned that they have already helped since the Dobbs decision of the U.S. Supreme Court last year. Their patient navigators have already helped more than 1,600 patients obtain care, sometimes traveling to another state. And so that may be there. It may be that some Iowa patients are directed to go to Minnesota. I would think most of them would go to Minnesota or Illinois. Nebraska has a ban that is only up to 12 weeks. So there may be some people who are able to obtain care. There's a Planned Parenthood clinic in Omaha that's just over the Missouri River.
Meanwhile, the ACLU issued a statement pointing out that it took less time to pass the law last night, about 15 hours, than the minimum 24-hour waiting period they require of Iowa women to get abortion care.
Yes, the waiting period is the one that the Iowa Supreme Court allowed to go into effect a year ago. And yes, normal legislative procedures, it would take more time to get a bill through a subcommittee and a committee, and then there would be some kind of a delay before the floor debate. Of course, yesterday, it all happened on the same day within hours. And so that is not usual legislative procedure. Then, because they were debating companion bills in both chambers at the same time, that sped up the process even more.
And you pointed out one more thing. You asked, is the law compatible with federal HIPAA requirements?
And this is something that came up during the Iowa House debate, and there was never a clear answer on it. So the bill says it requires medical providers to retain certain documents, including the whatever the report is from the abdominal ultrasound and some kind of a form that the woman is supposed to sign to confirm that this is what that she was told, this, that, or the other, and not a usual thing that medical providers would have. But the law requires medical providers to have the patient sign that form, and then they have to retain that form. And so the question is, does this mean that the Board of Medicine somehow is going to have the right to obtain and look at people's private medical records in order to determine whether a doctor violated this law by terminating a pregnancy when one of these exceptions didn't really apply? And of course, we don't know because the Board of Medicine hasn't even begun the process of adopting rules. And the floor manager in the House, Janine Lundgren, was really reluctant to say she didn't want to answer that question about HIPAA. She said that the bill is very clear that it doesn't contain any criminal liability for women, which is really a different question from would government officials, employees of the Iowa Board of Medicine, be able to have access to people's private medical records? And that is very much an open question right now.
And the other open question is how long it might take to ultimately determine this matter. It's going to go again to the state Supreme Court. We don't know the answer.
No, I mean, we can say based on other cases, it often takes about 2 years. The 24-hour waiting period was passed in June of 2020, and the decision was issued in June of 2022. There are other cases like that. It's possible that sometimes things can move a little more quickly. I think certainly at least a year. There's a certain amount of time that parties are allowed for briefing, and then they're allowed that the oral arguments don't happen right away. So I would think certainly more than a year, perhaps up to 2 years. And the biggest question, as we've discussed in the past, is what is Justice Dana Oxley going to do? She recused herself from the most recent case because the law firm where she used to work in Cedar Rapids represents the Emma Goldman Clinic, that abortion provider that's a party to the lawsuit. Well, the Emma Goldman Clinic is a party to the new lawsuit. So does that mean that Justice Oxley is going to recuse again? Or is it possible that she may decide after a certain amount of time has passed that she's not going to recuse from these abortion cases? So there are many, many questions.
And one more quick note, a Des Moines Register poll last March showed 61% of Iowans say abortion should be legal in most or all cases, but Republicans, they are disregarding that completely.
Well, this came up many times, again, both during the hearings and the committees and during the legislative debates. Many Democrats brought that up. And some of the Republicans responded and they said, look, we passed this in 2018 and we have larger legislative majorities now. So this is not a secret that this is something we want to do. And Iowans sent us back in large numbers to the state legislature. Iowans reelected the governor, who has been very clear that this is something she wants to do. So now, I mean, we know from other opinion polls that a lot of people who think abortion should be legal also vote for Republican candidates for other reasons. So it's not the sole voting issue for people. But in any case, that poll number was something that was mentioned. And also the public comments that were submitted on the legislature's website, and there were more than 1,000 of them submitted before the Iowa House public hearing. Those were running about 96% against the bill and only about 4% in favor of the bill.
Laura, we're absolutely out of time. I'm going to see you again live Monday night, and we'll have plenty to talk about.
Absolutely, Dennis.
Wow, that's it. We are out of time for this special live frenetic edition of Capital Week on this Wednesday. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back here in our regular time slot, 7 o'clock, next Monday night, 7 o'clock. to talk more about the abortion law the state legislature has passed and the legal challenges. We'll have plenty to talk about. And we'll also talk about anything else interesting or important that takes place in Iowa politics, including all those Republican presidential candidates coming into Des Moines this weekend. What a show we're going to have Monday night.